Continuing in Perek Hey of Sefer Shoftim, Shiras Devora. Shiras Devora is beautiful. It's nice. There are some parts that are a little drier than others. So if you found it a little bit dry, there are two pieces of good news. Number one, we'll be concluding it tonight. Number one, and number two, some of the more interesting psukim are towards the end. So if you haven't found it that interesting until now, hopefully tonight you'll find something of interest. And then Amir Tashem next week, we'll move on to Perek Vav. Okay, so we're up to Pasuk Chaf Beis. Perek Hei, Pasuk Chaf Beis. And again, we'll read the Psukim. We'll read the Art Scroll translation of the Psukim. And then we'll share some of the thoughts of Rashi and the Malbim. And in these Psukim, some of the thoughts of Chazal as well, to help understand the Devorah's words. So Pasuk Chaf Beis. Again, we're referring to this quote-unquote battle of Sisera and Barak and the Jewish army. It wasn't much of a battle, as we know. Sisera and his army fled, but the pasuk says in Chaf Beis, "Oz holmu ikve sus," that literally the way Art Scroll translates it as, "Then the horses' heels were pounded by the gallopings midaharos." The Haros Abirov, the gallopings of their mighty riders. So the horses' heels were pounded by the gallopings of the mighty riders. So Rashi understands that we're referring to not just pounded, but he understands that the hooves of the horses cracked or melted perhaps somehow. If you remember, we discussed this last week based on the pasuk chaf min shamayim nilchamu hakochavim imesilosam nilchamu im Sisera. So pasuk chaf described how the stars fought with Sisera, and we said according to Chazal that there were actual stars, like shooting stars, that came down and landed and crashed into Sisera and his camp. So Rashi understands along those same lines that these stars were very hot, obviously, and these hot celestial bodies came down and cracked the hooves of the horses, or melted the hooves of the horses, and that's what we're referring to. The Malbim understands also that if you remember, this is all happening kind of on a mountain which goes into a valley, and there's a nachal there, there's a brook, and the Malbim understands that this is also symbolic, that it's not just the actual gallopings of the horses as they're fleeing and running away, and the horse and their hooves are getting cracked or melted, but he understands that the waves of the brook, because of this quote unquote battle, the waves of the brook were like crashing, like dancing warriors, like galloping horses, coming to greet Sisera and his army. And if you remember last week, also we described how, according to one opinion in Chazal, this was actually almost like a continuation of Kriyas Yamsuf. That just like, remember we discussed this last week at the end, that just like Kriyas Yamsuf, the sea, so to speak, spit out the Mitzrim on the other side, so that the Jewish people could see that they actually drowned, and the sea came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a tine and said, "Hey, you're taking away our prize. We got the Mitzrim, you're taking away our prize." And Hashem said, "Don't worry, I'll pay you back. I'll pay you back 150%, right? If you remember from last week. So that was Sisera, that he had, Paro had 600 chariots, and Sisera had 900 chariots, which was 150%. So Sisera was, and his army and his chariots were washed away by these waters. So according to the Malbim, that's what we're referring to. We're referring to like these crashing waves that are similar to the galloping horses, crashing down on Sisera and his army. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Oru Meiroz Amar Malach Hashem. Translation, curse Meiroz. Okay, Meiroz, we'll learn, is the name of a place. According to some, it's the name of a place. Or a nation. So, curse Meiroz, said the angel of Hashem. Oru Arur Yoshveha. Cursed are its inhabitants. Ki lo va'u le'ezras Hashem ba'giborim. They did not come to the aid of Hashem, against the mighty. Now, what are we referring to? So Rashi understands that Meiroz, he gives two different pshat. In one pshat, he says it's referring to another star that did not come to help Bnei Yisrael. Some of the stars did come to help and crash down on Sisera and his army. This star, Meiroz, did not. So that's why we're cursing this star. The other interpretation, which is more pashat pshat, he says we're referring to an actual person or group of people or nation that were near the battlefield that could have come to help Bnei Yisrael against Sisera and did not come. So since they did not come, so the Malach is saying that they should be cursed. Rashi says that the Malach here is not referring to an angel, but the Malach is a messenger, right? And here the messenger is Barak, who is the messenger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the Shaliach. As we know, a Malach, right, throughout Tanakh, right, as we see already in the Torah, in the beginning of Bereishis, so we see Malachim can sometimes mean angels, can sometimes mean messengers, because essentially a Malach is a messenger. That's what a Malach is. A Malach is a messenger of Hashem. So to here, we're referring to Barak, who was the messenger of Hashem, who was referred to as a Malach. It's interesting, because here it says also in the Pasuk, it doesn't just say that they should be cursed, or that he, Meroz, should be cursed, but it says, Oru Arori Oshveha, that those who sit there should be cursed. What are we referring to? So Rashi says, based on Chazal, that Meroz was not just cursed, but Meroz was actually put into Cherem. And one of the halachos of Cherem is that no one's allowed to sit within Dal Amos, within four Amos of that person. Right, so if a person's in Cherem, you can't sit near them, right? They have to be by themselves. That's part of the idea of the Cherem, you know, isolating them. So here also, Oru Aror Yoshveha, that he was putting Meroz into Cherem, and he was saying, therefore, not only should he be cursed, but anyone who sits near him, anyone who comes into contact with him, should be cursed as well. And the Gemara says that the Gemara in Moed Katan says that he put him into Cherem. And you see, you know, I think just this, you know, essentially you see the importance of coming to help when you're available, right? That here Barak was so upset by this Meroz because literally the person stood by, right? It was like a fight, you know, like in school, right? You have the bully fighting with the victim, and people are standing by. So the people are standing by. We have a time on them. Why didn't you jump in? You know, we feel bad. We don't want to. It's uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, you see someone in trouble. If you're standing there, if you're nearby, you got to jump in and you got to help. Right, so to this Meroz had that achrayus, had that responsibility, and they didn't do it, and that's why they're cursed, and that's why they're put into chedim. You see the seriousness of coming to help. No se ba'olim chaveiro, right, in the language of the Muslim movement. No se ba'olim chaveiro, right, that a person bears the yoke with his friend. That when someone's going through something, you're supposed to go through it with them. You're supposed to feel it with them.
Did the Meroz know the whole background to why they were fighting?
Presumably people knew what was going on. Yeah, right. But presumably, you know, if Barak is cursing him and putting him into Cherem, then probably he knew what he was doing. You know, he probably knew that, you know, what he should have done. The fascinating idea by the Malbim here also, the Malbim says, Ki lo va'u le'ezras Hashem. It should have said le'ezras Yisrael, B'nei Yisrael, Barak. How come it says le'ezras Hashem? Because when you help a Jew, you're helping the Ribono Shel Olam. Right? Imagine someone helps a family member of yours. You know, your brother, your sister, your children, your grandchildren. Right? You know, they're in trouble, and somebody else helps them. What do you feel? You feel a debt of gratitude to the person. You feel like they helped you. Right? You feel like they helped you. So too here, we're the Banim Shel Makom. We're the Banim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If someone comes to help Klal Yisrael, they're helping Hashem, says the Malbim. The Pasuk says, Le'ezras Hashem. It doesn't say Le'ezras Yisrael. But that's the same idea. Le'ezras Hashem. Okay. Continuing on to Pasuk Chaf Dalet. This is a very famous Pasuk, very important Pasuk. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Tevorach Minoshim Yael. Yael, right? Yael was the one who killed Sisera. She should be blessed. How do they translate this? By women. Blessed by women is Yael. I've never seen this translation, actually. Art School translates Yael as Jael, with a J. Yeah, I've never seen that. Interesting. Okay. That's not a name that you will often see in English, you know, but I guess it's a biblical name. Most blessed. Blessed by women. Okay. Eishes Chever HaKeni. As we know, she was the wife of Chever the Keni. Minashim Ba'ohel Tivorach. Right, again, repeating the same words, but adding in one important word here, ba'ohel. Right, that by the women in the tent, she will be blessed. By the women in the tent, she will be blessed. So what are we talking about here? What's this ba'ohel? You know, she's Yael is blessed. She's blessed by women. She's blessed by women of the tent. What are we talking about? So, sorry? Well, I mean, she knew what happened to Sisera. I mean, it became public knowledge. Yael came out, and she told people. Yeah, I mean, they knew. They knew that. They knew that Sisera. They knew Sisera was killed. They knew Sisera was killed. She was also. I mean, Devorah was also a Nevi'ah. But besides for that, people knew what happened. You know, Yael did not keep this a secret. You know. Right.
The most famous one is all Sarah.
Good.
Good,
excellent, good. That's one. Good, excellent. So that's what Rashi says. Rashi says the Ohel here is referring to the Imahos. Right? And Rashi says if you look through the Torah, through specifically Sefer Bereishis, you find the word Ohel in Psukim in reference to each one of the Imahos. Okay, if you have Rashi there and you want to take a look at it, Rashi says in Pasuk of Dalet, Minarshim ba'Ohel, he says, Sarah, Shenemar ba'Hinei ba'Ohel. Right, Sarah, when the Malachim came to Avram, they said, oh yeah, Sarah's in the tent. Rivka shenemar ba vayivyeha Yitzchak ha'ohela. Right, Rivka, when she came onto the scene, when she first came, Eliezer brought Rivka to marry Yitzchak. So where did he bring her? Yitzchak brought her ha'ohela. He brought her to the tent, Rashi, right? Chazal explained, Rashi says over there that it was the ohel of Sarah. He brought her back to the ohel of Sarah. But also it says ohel in regards to Rivka. And then Rachel, v'leah shenemar bohen vayitzei me'ohel leah. Vayavoba Ohel Rachel. We find also the Psukim describing Ohel in regards to Rachel and Leah. So here we have Minashim ba Ohel Tivorach, that here Yael is being blessed specifically by the women of the Ohel. Who are these women of the Ohel? The Imahos. Right? These are the Imahos. Now what's the idea behind this? So a couple of different thoughts. So one Rashi shares with, based on, it's all based on Chazal, based on the Midrashim. So Rashi says that the Imahos gave birth and raised the nation. Right? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Velaya, they gave birth, they raised this nation, and they were the ones who really transformed the family of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov into the nation of Bnei Yisrael. So they essentially gave birth to this nation. This nation would have been killed by Sisera. Right, if Sisera was successful, it would have been killed. So who saved the nation? Yael. So Yael saved the nation of the Imahos, essentially. Right? She saved their kids. She saved their grandchildren. So that's part of the bracha here. Number one. That's one idea that Rashi shares. Another idea is that Yael was really a Yosheves Ohalim, just like the Imahos. Just like the Imahos are described, Sarah was Hineba Ohel, Vayivieha Yitzchak Ohela, right? Ohel Rachel and Ohel Leah. So these were women of the Ohel. They were women of the tent, so to speak. Now what does that mean? It doesn't mean that they were always in the tent and they didn't come out of the tent, right? But it means that they were the Akeres Habayis. They were the ones who built the families. They built their family into tremendous families, the family of Avram, of Yitzchak, of Yaakov, the Shivtei Ka. This is what they built. They were the Akaros Habayis. So says Rashi that perhaps Yael also was a Yosheves Ohalim, just like they were. And that's why she was Zoche to this position. And it's fascinating, because you would have thought, you know, thinking about the story, you would have thought that Yael was the first feminist. Right? She was the first feminist. Why? Because what did she do? She took on the man's role. She killed Sisera. Right? How many women are in combat, even today, in 2019? How many women are in combat roles? Right? Percentage-wise, across the world. Forget about America, right? Across the world. How many women are in combat relative to men? What is it? I don't know, 98% to 2% or something like that, right, in the world? Very few women are in combat roles. And here, who was the one to save Bnei Yisrael, to kill Sisera? Yael. So you would think, she's stepping out of her role. She's stepping into the man's role. She's the biggest feminist. So comes the pasuk and says, no, Tivorach minashim Yael, minashim ba'ohel Tivorach. Right? She wasn't one of these feminists who decided, I'm unhappy with the role of the Jewish woman. I want to be like the men, and that's why I'm going to do something different, you know, than all the other women do. No. She was a woman like all the other Jewish women. Just like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Velea were the Akaros Habayis and built their families and were responsible for all the Kedusha in their families, so too that was Yael. But that doesn't mean that she can't accomplish great things. That doesn't mean that she can't have the Siach Dishmai when it's necessary, the heavenly help when it's necessary to defeat Sisera. But it was with the balance of being minashim tevorach. It was with that balance of being a yosheves ohalim, of being that woman who was the akeres habayis, who was raising her family. That's what it was. When you have the balance of the two, when you're able to recognize, right, when you have a Jewish woman like Sarah Karacha Valeya, Yael, who's able to recognize, right, what the roles are, to be able to recognize what I need to do. I can still accomplish great things. I can still get out in the world and accomplish great things and kill Sisera and accomplish for Klal Yisrael and save Klal Yisrael. But at the same time, not to neglect what I am and who I'm doing and what I'm all about, and not to neglect my role as a Jewish woman of an Akeres Habayis to raise my family and to raise my family of the Kiddush of Itahara, right? Not to neglect it. That's what gave her the special schos. She had an incredible balance that other women didn't have. Some women maybe were Yosheves Ohalim and they didn't have that ability to break, you know, to stretch it a little bit and do what needed to be done. And some women maybe breached those fences and went too much outside of the box, so to speak. And Yael had the perfect balance. She was the Yosheves Ohalim, she was the Sarif Garach of Aleya, she was the one who was a woman of the Ohel, but at the same time able to say, I am a woman of the old, but at the same time, something comes my way. Sisera's here. I have to take action to save Klal Yisrael. I have to be able to stretch the box a little bit in order to accomplish for Klal Yisrael, for Kvod Shamayim. And that's what gave her the special schus to be in this incredible role. Now the Gemara is clear that she wasn't exactly. It's not like, you know. I mean, normally when we talk about the imams, we don't say Saraf Karach Valeya V'Yael. You know, we don't normally list her as the, you know, as on the same level of the Imahus. She's not a Neviyah, right? We talked about Devorah's a Neviyah. You know, we have seven Neviyos. The Yael wasn't a Neviyah. She may have been a great woman, she may have been a Tzadekes, but she wasn't a Neviyah. She wasn't quite on the level of the Imahus, right? But the Gemara says, but we're comparing her just in terms of her balance and her focus, and what she recognized was her true role, and what she recognized was what she had to accomplish a little bit.
Rabbi, how come Esther considered in that role also? I mean, she saved, in a certain sense, Klal Yisrael also.
Right. I mean,
and she gave up a lot of her own dignity and.
Sure. Of course. Right. I mean, I don't know that she's not. I don't know that she's not. I mean, I don't recall offhand if there are Mamari Chazal that equate, you know, Esther to the Imahos or reference Esther in the context of the Imahos. I don't recall offhand if there are, but I wouldn't rule it out. You know, here we find it by you know, in regards to Yael. But you're right, Esther had a very similar you know, story almost, how she saved Klal Yisrael by, you know, putting herself out there. We'll see in a little bit a very interesting another interesting connection between Esther and Yael also. It's interesting, the Malbim points out here that we just had the Pasuk in Pasuk Chav Gimel, I'm sorry, where we cursed Meroz. Why did we curse Meroz? For staying home and not coming out to help Klal Yisrael. And here, the Pasuk is blessing Yael for doing what? For being at home. For being an Isha of the Ohel. Right? Now, of course, she did what needed to be done. But the Malbim says, you see a fascinating contrast, that within two psukim, one back to back, one right next to the other, we have one person being cursed for staying home and not going out, and we have another person being blessed for staying home, right, so to speak, and being a woman of the tent, a woman of the ohel. And he says, the Malbim says that this underscores the importance of recognizing that we have to know where we're supposed to be and when we're supposed to be there. And there are times when we're supposed to be out, times when we're supposed to be in. Right, times when we're supposed to do, and times when we're supposed to refrain. And part of the, you know, part of Avodas Hashem is recognizing when am I supposed to step out and when am I supposed to pull back. And it's not always easy, right? Meroz made a mistake, and Yael was at Tzadikas and did the right thing, right? So we have to. That's part of the balance of being an Oved Hashem, to recognize, okay, when is it time for me to get out and to do something and to accomplish and to push the boundary and to go out of my box. And when is it time to pull back and to refrain and to stay behind? You know, that's an important thing to keep in mind also. Now, fascinating Chazal. Let's read. Okay. It's based on a pasuk later. If you look at, we'll just... We'll come back to it, but let's just look quickly. Fast forward to Pasuk Chaf Zayin. We'll come back to Chaf Hei and Chaf Vav in a minute. Actually, you know what? Let's go through Chaf Hei and Chaf Vav quickly, because they're relatively... let's go through Chaf Hei, Chaf Vav, Chaf Zayin, and then we'll come back and discuss what Chazal focus on here. So Chaf Hei, the Pasuk says, Mayim Sha'al. Now here we're referring to Sisera, of course. Sisera was thirsty. He asked for water. And Chalav Nasana. She gave him milk. Right? So we learned before that part of the reason why she gave him milk was because she wanted to tire him out. Right? But Rashi, interestingly, quotes the Targum Yonasan that she actually gave him milk to test him. Why? To test him and see how alert he was. Now, in order for her to implement her plan, she wanted to kill the guy, right? So she realized, and she realizes, she's a woman. This guy is one of the most powerful warriors in the world, and she's a simple woman. You know, Yosheves Ol, and we just compared it to Sarifka Rachavaleya, right? So she wasn't exactly a military woman. So she realized, in order for her plan to work, we have to get him drowsy. He can't be so alert. He's got to be tired and exhausted. So the Targum Yonasan says that she actually Mayim Sha'al Chalav Nasana. He asked for water. She gave him milk, not just to tire him out, but also to test him and to see how alert he was. Because if he's alert and he asks for water and he gets milk, he's gonna say, well, what's going on here? I asked for water, right? But if he's kind of exhausted and drowsy and a little bit out of it because of the battle and because of, you know, he was running for his life, so then she realizes, perfect, right? He's in the perfect state. He's not 100% alert. He doesn't really know 100% what's going on. And I can go ahead and I can kill him. B'seifel adirim hikriva chema. That she brought him, the art scroll says here, in a stately saucer. You know, she presented a cream. She brought him butter. Rashi says also here, maybe we're still referring to the milk, like the chema. Chema is butter, or it's the solidified form of milk. But she brought it in the seifel adirim. He says is the water pitcher, right? She filled up her water pitcher with milk to fool him and to test him and to see, you know, what does he know? What does he understand? How alert is he? Okay, pasuk chavav yada la yaseid hishlachna. That her hand, she stretched her hand to the peg. V'yemina lahalmus amelim, and her right hand to the laborer's hammer. Right, so she took her the hammer in her right hand, the peg in her left hand. V'halma sisra machaka rosha umachza v'chalfa rakaso. She hammered Sisera, right? V'halma. Right, like lahalmus amelim, halmus is the hammer. So v'halma Sisera, she hammered Sisera, macha karosho, she severed his head, umachta v'chalfa rakaso, and she smashed and pierced his temple, as we describe that she drove this peg right straight through his head, and it went through his head into the ground. That was the strength that she had. And again, right, we're talking about Sisera here was completely. Rashi says the amelim, the halmus amelim. So normally, Artswell translates it as the laborer's hammer. But Rashi says we're also talking about Sisera, who was laboring, meaning, and therefore he was exhausted because he had labored so much, because he had worked so hard, you know, in the battle and then fleeing, and he was exhausted. So that's also why she was successful. Now Malbim says, you know, the Pasuk says she held the hammer in her right hand and the peg in her left hand. And the Malbim says that, and he described this in the past when we actually read the story of Yael killing Sisera. The Malbim says it doesn't really matter which hand she would have held anything in, because she wasn't strong enough to do this. She didn't have the physical strength to be able, I mean, think about it, right? You know, we couldn't do this, right? Imagine, you know, Yael just having the physical, just the physical strength to be able to drive, you know, pick up this big hammer and drive a peg through his head, straight through his head into the ground. I mean, it's a miraculous thing. And so the Malbim says that this was completely miraculous. She was able to maybe pierce his skull a little bit, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped her through a mace, you know, helped her drive the peg right through his head. The now Pasuk Chav Zayin is a very, very interesting Pasuk. And here the Chazal tell us that we see something that we have not seen yet. Even though we already read the story of Yael killing Sisera, and we're almost done the Shira here, Shira's Devora, but nonetheless we have a Chiddush here in the Pasuk. Pasuk Chav Zayin, Bein Ragleha Kara Nafal Shachav. At her feet. Okay, so Art School translates this in the rated G way, right? At her feet He knelt, he fell, he lay. Okay? Kara, nafal, shachaf. He knelt, he fell, he lay. Again, bein ragleha, kara, nafal. At her feet, he knelt, he fell. The asher, kara, shom, nafal, shadud. Right? Where he knelt, there he fell, vanquished. Now, Chazal say this pasuk is incredibly redundant. Right? How many times do we have the word kara nafal? Okay, so if you count up kara nafal, all the times that it says this, it says it 7 times. Right? Kara nafal. Actually, we're probably including shachav also. Kara nafal shachav. Right? He knelt, he fell, he lay. Again, ben ragleha. Kara nafal. Another 2 times, that's 5. Basher kara sham nafal shadud. So 7 times it says kara nafal. Okay, so what are we talking about? And also the Bein Ragleha, what's going on here? So Chazal tell us, and again, this is not explicit in the Psukim, but Chazal tell us that Sisra and Ya'el actually had relations. And that's why it says, Karan Nafal Shacham, and that's why it says it 7 times, because they had relations 7 times.
Ya'el and who?
Ya'el and Sisra. Ya'el and Sisra, when he came to the tent. Right? When you read the Psukim, it doesn't say anything about this. It just says... No. Right? I don't think so. Okay? So it's not... And you read the Pesukim, it doesn't say anything. It says, she gave him something to drink, she gave him a blanket, it sounds like totally kosher, right? And here Chazal say, but if you read this Pesuk, with all the redundancies, the 7 times it says, Karan, Afal, Shachav, and also the language of Bein Ragleha, which implies something maybe a little bit more intimate. So say Chazal, that here we see that they actually had relations 7 times. Now why in the world... Right? I mean, maybe we understand, from his perspective, he was an animal. Okay? But from her perspective, what's going on here? Right? So...
If you go back to Perek Dalet...
Yes?
It's Ayovo Eileha.
Right?
So
oh.
That would fit in here also.
So maybe the language of Ayovo Eileha... So we read it, when we read Perek Dalet, we read it as, he just came. He came into the tent. But we know it sometimes in Tanakh, the language of Ayovo, right? Eileha sometimes can mean that more intimate also. Right? Very good. So Chazal say that this was a calculated move, right? It wasn't that he just did it against her will. You could understand it that way, that he just abused her. It was against her will. He came in from the field and he saw her and he just took her and abused her. But Chazal say, no, she did this willingly. Why? This was a cheshba, right? Because this was part of her plan to completely exhaust him, to completely tire him out, and get him in a state where he's not alert, where he's not really himself. He's in a totally, different kind of state, weakened state. Right, his guard is down, and now she's going to be able to kill him. Right, she's doing whatever she can to be able to kill this guy because she knows that the only way Klal Yisrael is going to survive is if he's dead. And she says, "He's in my tent. Right, he's in my tent. I have him right here. What am I going to do to kill him? What am I going to do to kill him?" So that's what the Gemara says. That's what she did. Now it's a fascinating thing. The Gemara says that the Gemara calls this what's called an avera lishma. And Aveira Lishma. Now we know about mitzvos, Lishma and Shalom Lishma, right? A mitzvah Lishma means doing a mitzvah for the right reason. You're doing it for Hashem, right? What's a mitzvah Shalom Lishma? I'm doing it for the honor. I'm doing it for the kavod. I'm doing it because, for whatever reason, I'm getting a little benefit from it. That's a mitzvah Shalom Lishma. And Chazal say, a person should always do Torah mitzvahs, even if it's Shalom Lishma, right? Even if I'm giving tzedakah because I want my name on a building, that's okay, right? Because hopefully I'll get to a point where I'll be able to do the mitzvos and learn the Torah, just for the right reasons. But, even if you're doing it for ulterior motives, the Gemara says that's fine. Do it for ulterior motives. Hopefully you'll get to a good place when you're doing it lishma. Fine. But here, Chazal coined a new phrase, avera lishma. Avera lishma. What's an avera lishma? It's when I'm doing an avera for Hashem. I'm not doing an avera for me. I'm not doing an avera for my Yetzer Hara. I'm not doing an avera because it satisfies me, it brings me pleasure. I'm doing an Aveira. I'm doing an Aveira for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's it's an Aveira Lishma. And the Gemara has a fascinating language. Amazing. Gedola Aveira Lishma mi mitzvah shalom lishma. That an Aveira Lishma is even greater than a mitzvah shalom lishma. When I do a mitzvah for the wrong reason, that's good. I'm doing a mitzvah, right? I'm giving tzedakah. Because I want, the Polakov pavilion, right? So that's why I'm giving all this tzedakah, right? So it's a mitzvah shalom lishma, so that's good, right? But Aveira Lishma is even better. Aveira Lishma is even better. Okay? And the Gemara says, what's the example of an Aveira Lishma? Yeah. So the Gemara says, Ya'el. right? Tivorach minashim ya'el eishes chever akein minashim ba'el tivorach. It quotes our pasuk, and it says that we compare Ya'el to Sarah, Rivka, Rachav, Leah, as we just said, all the imahos, and she did Navera. She did Navera Lishma. She had relations with this guy. She did Navera Lishma. So the Gemara asks, one second, you want to tell me it was an Avera Lishma? Maybe she still got a little Hana, right? She still was involved in an act which is a pleasurable act. So maybe she got a little bit of Hana. So the Gemara says, Chas v'shalom. The Gemara says, Kol tovason shel rasha'im eina ela ra'a eitzel tzadikim. Anything that's of benefit to rasha'im is terrible for tzadikim. So since she was a tzadikis, he was of course getting pleasure. He was a rasha. So since she was a tzadikis, it was terrible for her. The Ben Ish Chai explains, it's not clear 100% of the Gemara like this, but he explains the Gemara. The Ben Ish Chai says that since she was so holy, right? Ya'el was so holy, she was compared to the Sarifka Racha Valeya, that being with this Rasha was tsar for her. It was painful for her, right? There was absolutely no pleasure. It was painful. It was tsar. She was only doing this. It was only Lishma. She was only doing this for the Ribbono Shel Olam, only doing it for Klal Yisrael. That was the only reason why she was doing this. She didn't get an ounce of benefit, an ounce of pleasure. Everything was tsar, it was pain. That's all she experienced, right? She shouldn't experience anything positive. And not only that, but there's a fascinating Meshe Chachma. The Meshe Chachma, he discusses this, because the Shiras Devora is the Haftorah. We just read it not long ago, the Haftorah for Parshas Beshalach, right? That's Shiras Devora. So the Meshe Chachma says that if you look, the language of, which pasuk is this? Hold on a second. One second, sorry. Oh, the pasuk in Perek Dalet. So you have to look back at Perek Dalet if you want to take a look at it, or I'll just read it to you. The pasuk in Perek Dalet, pasuk Tes. So the pasuk says, "Va'tomer haloch eilech imach." So here, if you remember, Devora. This is the beginning of the Haftorah of Beshalach. Devorah is talking to Barak. If you remember, Barak says to her, I want you to come with me. Right? I'm going to go fight, but I want you to come with me. And what does Devorah say? I'm going to come. I'll come with you. But she says to him, remember, you're not going to get all the glory. Right? You're not going to get the glory of defeating Sisera. Ki biyad isha yimkor Hashem es Sisera. Hashem is going to sell Yimkor. Hashem is going to sell Sisera to the hands of a woman, right? And this was a nevuah about Ya'el, and she was going to have this chus of killing Sisera, right? So it says the Meshe Chachma, what's the language of Yimkor? Ki biyad isha Yimkor. Yimkor means to sell, right? That Hashem is going to sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. Why not say Yitain, right? Ki Yitain, Yitain, ki biyad isha Yitain Hashem es Sisera. Why Yimkor? So says the Meshe Chachma that Yimkor, when you buy something, right, when somebody, you know, a merchant selling something, you buy it, you have to give something, right? You're buying it, you have to give something. So here he says that, what did Ya'el give? So he says that Ya'el actually became usher to her husband because of this relationship with Sisera. It wasn't just that she went through the physical trauma and pain of being intimate with this Rasha, but she even became usher to her husband. Right? She even became usher to her husband because of this relationship. Again, keep in mind, she did this willingly, according to Chazal. She did it willingly, right? But nonetheless, she said, "I have no choice. I have to do this. This is for Klal Yisrael. This is to save Klal Yisrael, to kill this Russia." And that's the language of Yimkor, that she had to give something up. She had to pay for it. This was how she paid for it, by becoming usher to her husband. Okay. This is the understanding of Chazal. Now, just as an aside, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz does say, I saw this quote, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says that this concept of an Avera Lishma is a fascinating concept, but he says it's halacha v'lo l'maisa, right? He says this is for people like Ya'el. This is for like people on the Madrega of the Imahos, of Sarifka Racha Valeya. He says, we can learn about it. He said, but we can't practice this. None of us could ever, Chas V'Shalom, say, oh, I'm going to do an Avera Lishma. We're not that holy. right? We're not such tzaddikim and tzidkanios that we're able to do an avera lishma. When we do averas, it's not lishma. When we do averas, it's for us, right? It's because we get benefit, we get pleasure from it, right? Yael was able to do an avera lishma with nothing for her, just for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why she did this, right? But that's for a person on Yael's madriga, not for a person, not for people like you and I. It's interesting that this is what Chazal say, but there is a medrash which seems to contradict this Gemara, and the medrash seems to say that you read the psukim literally, and he didn't touch her, right? Shelo naga ba oso rasha. He didn't touch her, just like you read the psukim literally. Nothing happened, right? She covered him. She gave him something to drink. But there was no intimacy whatsoever. That's how the different medrash seems to understand it, and he says, you know, it seems to be a little bit of a contradiction. So there's a tshuva from a Divrei Yoel I saw quoted here that he quotes in the name of the Zohar that by Esther, right? Marvin mentioned Esther before. So how was Esther able to live with Ahasuerus? So the Gemara discusses it. But there's a Zohar that seems to say that Esther actually didn't do it herself, but there was some sort of a shade, that it was some sort of a demon or like a stunt double, you know, that Esther sent to Ahasuerus, that she actually wasn't intimate with him herself. And he suggests that maybe that's how the Medrash is understanding when the Medrash says Shelo Nagaba Osa Rasha, that Sisra didn't touch her. Maybe it was like some sort of a shade, just like the Zohar says by Esther. Maybe similarly, it was some sort of a shade. But again, that's the Medrash understanding. That's not the Pashup Shad in the Gemara. Pashup Shad in the Gemara is that they were intimate together, and this was an example of an Aveir Lishma. Okay. Let's continue now with Pasuk Chaf Ches. Finishing up towards the end of the Shira here. Be'ara Chalon Nishkifa. Vatiyabev Eim Sisra. Famous Pasuk also. That the mother of Sisra is looking out from the window, right? She's looking out from the window for her son to return, for her son Sisra to return from battle. Vatiyabev Eim Sisra, Vatiyabev. So Rashi says Pashup Shat Vatiyabev means she was speaking, she was talking, she was talking. You know, when is my sorry? I think this thing just died. But when is my son going to come home from battle? She was talking about it. And but Chazal, as we know, understand that she was crying. Vatiyabev im Sisra, that she was crying, and like almost like a trua, right? And that's why we know that we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. We sound the kolos, the shvarim and the trua to remind us of im Sisra. That's why we blow 100 kolos on Rosh Hashanah, because she cried 100 times, right? Vatiyabev im Sisra, that she was crying because her son was not coming home. Rashi says also Vatiyabev might even mean she was looking. Nishkefa Vatiyabev, she was looking and seeing, and she was not finding her son returning. Ve'ad ha'eshnav, okay, through the window. So the article translates Chalon and Eshnav both as window. The Malbim says that Eshnav is not a regular window. Chalon is a window. Eshnav means some sort of window that's associated with a chachma. So according to the Malbim says that she looked out the window, she looked for Sisra's return, he wasn't coming back. So what did she do? She looked in the window of chachma. What was the window of chachma? Sorcery, right? She looked into her sorcery to figure out what happened to him. Says the Malbim, quoting the Sefer Ikarim, that she saw him, right, in this sorcery, a vision appeared to her, of her son Sisra lying on the ground, a woman standing over him, we know as Yael, right, holding his severed head, okay, and you know it was dripping with blood. That's the vision that Aim Sisra sees. That's what she sees in this vision of Ha'eshnav. Madua, continuing in the pasuk, Madua Boshesh Richbo Lavo. Right? Why does his chariot? Why is his chariot delayed? Why is his chariot delayed and not coming right away? Madua echeru pa'amei markavosav. Why is it that the hoofbeats of his carriages are so late? And the Malbim also explains that echar means to delay, but boshesh is an irregularly long delay. If you remember, by Moshe Rabbeinu, when he didn't come down, when he quote unquote didn't come down from Har Sinai, Vayar Ha'am Kivoshesh Moshe Loredes Min Ha'har. Right, that's the language that they thought. Wait a minute, Moshe is, this is an extra long delay. This is not a normal delay. This is something extra. You know, really, he should be here by now. And at the end of the pasuk, it says Pami Mar Kivosov, because she says even if he died in battle, his chariot should come back. Somebody should come back and tell me that he's that he died. Nobody came. Right? There was nothing. No word. Zero. Pasuk Chavtes. Chachmos Saroseha Ta'anena. That the wisdom of her servants, of her officers, her ladies, answered her. Af hi tashiv amareha la. And she too offers herself responses. And again, because she's interpreting this on her own, she comforted herself. You know, she and they all tried to interpret. Also, they saw this picture. They saw the sorcery. They tried to interpret it in a positive way. They tried to see, how can I spin this? You know, she's thinking to herself, how can I spin this in a positive way? How can I talk about this in a positive way? She tried to interpret it, tried to spin it, but nothing happened. Pasuk Lamed, halo yimtzu yichalku shalal. And she's thinking to herself, why are they delayed? Maybe they're delayed, maybe they're finding and dividing the loot. Racham asayim, l'rosh gever. Maybe a captive, a beautiful captive, maybe two captives for every man. Shalal tzivoyim l'sisra, shalal tzivoyim rikma, tzeva rikma asayim l'tzavarei shalal. Right, maybe they're splitting, they're dividing the booty of colored garments for Sisra, booty of colored embroidery, colored, doubly embroidered garments for the necks of the looters. You know, she's wondering to herself, maybe that's what's delaying them. Maybe that's what's taking so long. They're dividing all the shalal, dividing all the booty, all the spoils. Maybe that's what's happening. The pasuk lamid aleph, the final pasuk in the perek in the shira, kain yovdu kol oivecha Hashem. And it ends with a little bit of a tefillah. That so too, just like Yael killed Sisra, just like Bnei Yisrael was saved from Sisra, so too, Kein Yovdu Kol Oivecha Hashem, Hashem, all of your enemies should so be destroyed in the same way. Ve'o'avav Kitzeis Hashemesh Bigvura So. But the lovers of Hashem, those that are beloved to Hashem, those that love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should come out like the sun comes out with courage, with power, with force in the morning. That's how the lovers of Hashem should come out. Just like it's not covered by clouds, it just comes out with power and with strength and with gvura. That's how the lovers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu should come out. And the perek ends, and Rashi points out, or the Malbim, Rashi says this, sorry, that this is not Devorah speaking. These last four words is from the author of the book, which is Shmuel. Shmuel Hanavi, who authored Sefer Shoftim, he concludes this perek, last four words, Fatishkot Ha'aretz Arba'im Shana. That after the fall of Sisera, the land was quiet, things were quiet and peaceful for 40 years, and Amir Tzah Hashem next week will pick up with Perek Vav, learning what happens after those 40 years. Yeah.